Good morning, good morning, good morning.
Welcome, welcome, welcome.
Welcome to the What's the Temp podcast. My name is Bettina and I'm coming in hot.
And I'm Jen and I need to check in so I don't check out.
I love it. Today's episode is called Love and Transitions. And I think that's so befitting for now, especially since our conversations last week kind of hinted on marriage and stuff like that. So I'm excited to have this conversation with you. So you want to start with our temperature check this morning, which is based on relationship temperatures. So what's your, what is your relationship temp check this morning?
I would say we're in the mid 50s this morning. We're warming up.
Okay.
Yesterday we were in the, I'd say we were down to about 35. It was brisk. It was chilly in the house. It's no sunny in 83, believe you me. But there's a defrosting period. There was a communication misfire yesterday.
Okay.
And that's what always sets off the Cold War.
There's something that I appreciate about you that I'm still learning to, I'm just learning, which is every argument does not mean the end of the world, or every change in season does not mean the end of this beautiful thing we built. Everything for me always signified, is this over? Am I leaving you? Are you leaving me? Are we, you know, so I love that about you.
I'm learning that. It took a long time.
My relationship temp check is a relationship with myself, you know, of a relationship of wholeness, a relationship of comfort and peace, without all of the natural accoutrements. So a lot of times we find ourselves as women longing for love, longing for intimacy, longing for just what isn't available to you right now. And so instead of learning how to bask in the moment and enjoy the moment, like I get to do some extra, you know, self-love and some self-care in this season when I'm not responsible for anybody else's heart at this moment. So for me, my temp check is about, I'm going to give it like a good 72. And it's because I'm learning to take care of me in this season. I'm really, really identifying what I want, how I want to show up in relationship, how I want to serve someone else in love, and how I want to, how I see my future relationships. But I think it all starts with me, and it starts with loving me and knowing me to give myself what I really want. And in order to do that, I have to know it. And in order to know it, I have to learn me. So it's a good 72 degrees and warm and fuzzy and cuddly today for me in relationships.
I heard a really great quote this morning in a meeting. Someone said, in order to recover, you have to uncover.
Mm-hmm. I love that.
And she actually went on to say, you know, you have to feel pain. You have to find what's inside of there that hasn't been healed and bring it out into the light and do that work. And you're only as sick as your secrets. And, you know, this is coming from someone who had lived life clearly.
Yeah.
And was, she, you know, she's an older woman. And I just wrote that down because I loved that, the you have to uncover to recover. You can't stuff it down.
My version of that is you can't heal what you hide. That's my version
of
that.
You are so good. You're always one step ahead of me.
You can't heal what you hide. I mean, as long as we're hiding it, then that thing never comes to the light to really get the attention that it needs to turn into something that can help you. And it reminds me that whatever circumstance I go through, even when it's a bad situation, I never want to leave. And for a long time, this was my prayer. I never want to leave a circumstance, even if it looks like the worst thing that could ever happen to me, without the nugget of wisdom that has to be held inside that situation. Because the only time I lose is if I don't get that nugget of wisdom.
You are speaking directly to me right now.
Wow.
That is so true. So because I've been up in my head about something that happened, that it's strange because I had realized a couple of days ago that I hadn't really said anything to anybody about it. And that's so unlike me, because usually the second I become emotionally uncomfortable in any way, I pick up the phone, and it's one of my most tried and true tools in my spiritual toolbox, is check my thinking against somebody else. But I did end up telling a couple people, but it's strange because I waited a while before I did it, and it's been bugging me. So I wanted to, you know, in the spirit of you can't hide if you can't heal if you hide. What was it?
You can't heal what you hide.
Okay. So I'm not intentionally hiding it, but I think I need more light to shine on it. So I'm going to throw this out there. So on Wednesday, just this is how I'm working through this situation. So on Wednesday, I was on a work call and some delivery guys came over to deliver my daughter's furniture. So they came in, they delivered the furniture. And after they left, actually, it was the following morning, I went to the bagel store and I opened my wallet to tip the bagel people, and they robbed me.
Oh my gosh.
One of them, I imagine. I know. So, So here's the thing. That's a bad feeling. So I've been robbed, and I don't mean rob in the definition of like take by force, but I mean rob in the sense that like you took something that wasn't yours from me. Mm-hmm. 3 times in my life. The two previous times were both in Manhattan. The first time was when I was really young and someone broke into my car. And the second time was actually also in my car. I parked my car in a parking garage and someone went into the trunk and they took, I don't know why, I was such a sketchball when I was in my early 20s. This was actually on the Upper West Side. I had a video camera in my car, and in the video camera bag, I had a bunch of weed and a bunch of cash. Like, what a sketchball. I know. And I just left it in the trunk, and whoever was parking the car or whatever, they went into the trunk and they took the weed, the money, and also a bunch of the tapes, my videotapes, and that's what I really lost it over. So here's now how I'm reflecting. The first two times that someone stole from me, I lost my mind. I took it so incredibly personally on both counts. It's a really bad feeling. Like, mm-hmm. no matter what, you're going to feel violated. That's the primary feeling, is violated.
Absolutely.
I'll get into what's my part in it. So my first reaction, obviously, is I feel violated. My second reaction is, this is only new for me. I don't take it personally. This is not a me problem. This is a you problem.
Yeah.
Whoever took it, it's one of these guys, you know? I doubt it was both. Who knows? But this is not a me problem. So I'm not going to own that. Now, that said, my next response is always going to be, what is my part in it, if any? Because that's the part that I actually have control over. So I don't have control over your morality. His moral compass, that's kind of his problem. It's not up to me to manage his moral compass. The worst thing about it, too, is that I handed each one of these men a $20 bill.
I'm sure you did.
After they installed the furniture, because what I had done, and the reason why I didn't realize that they stole the cash in that moment, is because I had taken it aside because I was on that work call. Yeah, because I didn't want to fuss with it. So, you know, it just doesn't feel that good because it's like you cleared out I don't know how much was in there, like $200-$300. But so then I have to think, okay, what is my part in it? Number one part is I left my bag right out on the kitchen table because I was on that work call. So it didn't occur to me to go and hide my bag. I'm just a very high trust person. So that is a lesson that I think I need to learn. Mm-hmm. I can't be that high trust. Mm-hmm. I am really that way. I just never think of it. I just think everybody's good. Everybody's good. And I'm not saying they're not good, but, you know, because I couldn't decide if I should call that company and tell them that this person stole from me or these people. I couldn't decide. I felt really paralyzed by that because number one, I didn't want to get whoever the other guy was in trouble. Because if it was only one of them, I didn't want to endanger the other one's job. So I called my sponsor and she said, well, there's two ways you can look at it. You can either look at it like that person needed it more than you did, which is absolutely 100% true. Or you can look at it like you should report it because you would want to save the next person from being stolen from. Because if it's a crime of opportunity and the next person, next house they're at, that person who obviously lacks impulse control to some extent or just needs the cash, they would do it again. And I could potentially head off it happening to the next victim.
Right.
So after sorting out, okay, this is a you problem, then what can I learn from this? So the first lesson I can learn is don't leave your bag out and don't be so high trust like that. I was really distracted being on that work call, but also I think I would have done it anyway. I just really wouldn't have occurred to me that someone might do that. Then the next thing I thought is I had so much compassion for this person because I was thinking, what if they, you know, my mind always goes to like, what if they have a habit, meaning a drug habit, because all of the people that I know who steal or used to steal are drug addicts. So when you're like, especially people who are addicted to pain pills in particular or any type of downer, like they will become physically ill if they cannot get more.
Right.
But the next lesson that I learned from it, because I'm a very big, you know, universe person or energy person. I'm really, really into the idea of there being some type of higher power or higher meaning or higher whatever. And I have noticed a pattern. I'm always like, what am I supposed to learn from this? Why is this happening? What's going to connect the dots here? And immediately I know what it is. Every single time I become overly attached to something, the universe is like, I'm going to screw you over. It happens every single time. And I'm going to give you three examples from the past 6 months. Number one, I went to Walmart to get shoes for my daughter. I got to the register. They were $3. I immediately became activated because I love a bargain and because these shoes are like $17. So I right away was like, so I have the disease of more. So right away I was like, need more shoes. Need more $3 shoes. And I become compulsive about shopping. I have like a borderline shopping addiction. Mm-hmm. So I drove all over the state of New Jersey that day looking. I was on maternity leave still. I drove all over the state of New Jersey looking for more shoes like this for my daughter. I was like, oh, let me check out this Walmart. This one is 15 minutes out of the way in the opposite direction. And I was like, nope, there were none of that shoe there. So I was like, well, gotta go half hour in the opposite direction. So now that's 45 minutes backtracking to go to a different Walmart supercenter to see if maybe they're there. I wasted like half a day like a psycho driving around stalking Walmarts to find these $3 wow. shoes. Never found them. I know, I really am crazy. Never found them. Ended up buying the same shoe online for the full price because now I just need to walk away with something. And the original shoes, the $3 shoes, here's what happened with them. First time she wore them, peed on them. Yep. Came home from daycare, they were in a bag.
Oh, I wasn't ready for that. I wasn't ready.
Yep.
That's yep. awesome.
And then every single time after that I've asked her to wear them or initiated putting them on, she just straight up refuses to wear them. She's never worn them once.
So now I have full of pee.
they have bad juju. And now I have two pairs of them because now I spent, again, the original price. I bought another pair because I was grasping, that idea of grasping, you know, that. So this is that spiritual concept of attachment. Attachment is the opposite of the spiritual axiom. And I feel that grasping feeling sometimes and then I act on it. Second one, mugs, handmade ceramic mugs. I just got into this kick because I found this mug at my friend's house, the same friend who has that blanket that I love. That same day, I encountered this mug and I was like, wow, what a beautiful object. I'm not even a mug person, but I was just so drawn to this mug. I became obsessed with it. I ordered it from this store in Asbury Park. It came to me. Then I became obsessed because they weren't the exact same color as my friend's mugs. Then I had a whole correspondence with the woman who owned the shop. I said, these are not the same color as my friend's. And then I said, I'm going to return these and get some different mugs. I sent them back. Mugs got smashed to hell in the mail. USPS just threw that box or stomped on it or something like that. So they arrived smashed. So I get this email from her like, by the way, these mugs are smashed. She put it on me to do the USPS claim, whatever. I end up driving down to Asbury because, of course, I can't let it go to see the remaining two mugs. But then these mugs are a slightly different color. Then I manipulate my friend to give me two of her four original mugs that are like the more pinkish color. So I can't let this go, right? I'm obsessed with these mugs. Then I finally walk away with one of her more pinkish color mugs and one of the last two remaining mugs in the world, which live at this boutique store in Asbury. Come home, first thing that happens, mug breaks.
Oh, no.
I'm telling you, it's a sign from whatever, whatever's out there. So that's the thing. It's the shoes. She never used the shoes. She peed on them. The mug, I could not let these mugs go. I was obsessing about it for weeks. Finally got the mugs. One of the mugs breaks. This bedroom furniture was the exact same thing. I was compulsively like on my phone, researching furniture on Wayfair, on this, on that, going to like, I think I visited 5 different stores just in the immediate area, maybe more. I was running out at 8 p.m. Like, who does that? You have kids at home. I was compulsively looking for this furniture, could not let it go. What should happen? The furniture comes, I get robbed. It's like, this is the lesson I think that, you know, you, I always just call my version of higher power you.
Mm-hmm.
Is it God? Is it God? I don't know. Yes, it's God, but it's my version of God. You with a capital U, but also you, the letter U for universe. So it's something that's out there that I believe in. This is 3 times that I have become uncontrollably obsessed with something and it's come back to bite me. So that's the lesson I'm taking away from this. And this is how I'm choosing to see this. This is a lesson that keeps repeating itself because I'm not learning the lesson.
So you know I have something to say, right?
I know. You waited so patiently while I wrapped that up. Thank you.
You know, I have something to say. You're a good
friend. You're such a good friend for indulging me.
So first, let me just say that was beyond a relationship temperature check, and you have beautifully catapulted us into our backstory, which is supporting honest growth through life changes. And there's an opportunity for growth here for you. And I feel like you've already recognized it. You may just not have the same language that I have for it. So for me, what I've noticed in life is that the people that have the most peace are the ones that don't have a lot of attachment to things. So they may be super wealthy. They may have uber success in their businesses and in life. And it's almost like everything they touch turns to gold, right? Everything they touch turns into a success. And I feel that the secret sauce to that is that they're not putting their eyes on the thing. So it's all about whatever it is that they're here to do or whatever it is that they were supposed to accomplish. And that thing, because they did it with everything that they had and because they gave all of themselves to that thing, whether it's a conference, whether it's a business, whether it's helping teenagers, they gave that thing all that they had. And that turned into an amazing level of success for them. And then they were able to get recognition or influence as a result. But they didn't have a lot of attachment to the roar of the people, nor to their input for the thing. They just felt like they were doing what they were called to at that moment. And for me, that is not taking my eyes off of the purpose or off the goal or off God, whatever it is, because the second I start looking around like, oh, I'm doing a good thing. Oh, this is turning out well. I'm this, I'm that, I'm this, I'm that. When it's really not me, it's the grace that allows me to do that thing well, to speak well, to help and get good results for the people that I'm serving. It's not about me. And the second I take my eyes off of what I'm supposed to be here to do and put it on this and that, I begin obsessing and becoming compulsive, and that OCD-ish behavior is always bad. Does that make sense?
You are speaking my language. You're right. You're absolutely right. I'll try to summarize what you said in my own words. So usually each morning I wake up and I set an intention to stay humble, to stay transparent enough that whatever light is out there can shine into me and then out of me. So the way that I think of it visually is that there's light above and around, but let's just call it above, and the light will come down into me as long as I don't become opaque. And what I mean by opaque is I become concerned with material things in this example, so the shoe, the furniture, the mugs. When I'm busy managing, controlling, being OCD, doing things for me, because even though these shoes were for my daughter, it was really about me. I just love to shop. I love to stay busy. I like to be, you know, so I was taking my eye off of what is my purpose? What is my higher purpose for today? So I don't necessarily always know what the higher purpose is for today. So what I pray for or what I set an intention for is to just stay transparent, meaning stay open enough to receive intuitive messages about what is the next right thing.
Mm-hmm.
In all three of these examples, I took the wheel. I decided this thing that I'm now compulsively drawn to do, that I'm obsessed with, I'm just going to throw, you know, openness out the window, and I'm going to become fixated. I'm going to become caught. I'm going to be doing this grasping behavior. I need this. And that's a selfish behavior. It's sort of like a state of being asleep instead mm-hmm. of aware and more aware of my environment. And how I combat that is usually when I wake up in the morning, I just set the intention or I ask to be guided. Because mm-hmm. when I'm at the wheel, that's what happens. I become a crazy maker driving all over New Jersey looking for $3 shoes at Walmart. Why? What are you doing?
And then when we bring that full circle to what we've been talking about prioritizing and not going down these rabbit holes that suck up your time, because hypothetically, even if you found another pair of $3 shoes, those would have been the most expensive shoes that you bought for a small mm-hmm. child ever. Because when you look at how much you make an hour, I know you're not an hourly employee, but if you broke your time down to an hourly thing and then looked at what you paid in gas, what you gave in time, and what you gave in, what money you lost not doing any kind of revenue generating tasks, which, you know, that's what I think about as an entrepreneur. You just paid easily $117 for a pair of $3 shoes.
Mm-hmm. And was it worth it? What did you get out of those shoes?
And they turned
them in a closet.
They were full of pee.
You moved on to the next thing right away. Yeah. And even if I did stick them in a closet, it's not like that gave me any lasting satisfaction.
No. And so then that's you wrapped up. And another thing, I just want to take a moment and say, I am so sorry that that happened to you, that someone came into your home and took something that did not belong to them. It's sad that you have to look around your house and take inventory and see what can be picked up and taken out of your home. It's sad that you have to look at your home as anything outside of a sanctuary because someone is walking in. But unfortunately, that is the world that we're living in. And you do have to say, oh, these guys are coming in, and just glance around like with your laser eye really quick. It takes 20 seconds to say, what do I need to move? What could be easily picked up? And then the other side of the conversation for me, because I go way beyond what's happening in the moment, did you make sure all of your credit cards were still there and your old debit card? And you know what I mean? Things like that. Just just to make sure that there's no lasting, you know, things that pop up later because they also grabbed an old credit card or something that you haven't used in forever. So I take a little bit of inventory, and this is just an awareness for you to just glance around when someone's walking into your home that is not a friend. You don't know the state of mind. You don't know what they're going through. And while you are to have compassion, you are not supposed to take on that dirtiness. That was still a violation, and that was still very much not okay. And how I think about it is I feel like there should probably be some kind of notification process, because we know that people who are like doing things and just repeatedly, if every time they walked into somebody's home and they picked up something, what if the next person was hurt or was hurt differently, or they felt the need to hide or something like that, and then they need to get rid of a person, or this thing could escalate really quickly. So I would make a simple phone call, not make it a big deal like this person, just say, hey, this happened to me. I don't know which one it was, but just please be aware, because I would hate to see another person, another one of your customers victimized because they allowed someone from that's supposed to be in your employ. And I'm thinking of you when I think of the person that stole out of my wallet that day. I hope they needed it. I hope it blesses them. You know what I mean? But I just would hate to see that happen to someone else.
I'm still really torn on whether I want to report it, because, you know, part of me feels so gaslit. Like, there's really a part of me that's still thinking, is it possible that I could have taken my own cash out of my wallet? This seems like an insane thought process, because I remember the timeline was that the night before I gave Herschel $50 because we had given $100 to this fundraiser. So I remember giving him cash, or no, it was that morning. And then I remember taking the tip money out and putting it in my pocket. So I remember having cash that morning. And then the following morning was the morning I went to the bagel store and had no cash. But then there's just this tiny part of me that's like, well, did you take out all the cash? Is it possible that maybe, I mean, and it's not, but I feel so gaslit, because it's like, I'm questioning my own sanity, you know, that feeling that where it's just like, can I be 100%, 100%? Because if I'm going to level this accusation, and then another part of it is just that I don't want the other person losing their job because of one person. And, you know, I'm still not,
it just sucks,
completely decided yet.
I'm just hoping that you giving them that extra tip, and then with that heartfelt thank you and a smile, was like heaping coals on their heads. That's what I hope for them.
Karma will get them. That's the thing about that. I believe that. And then also that thing that we said, what is it? If a man takes your coat, also give him your hat. What was the actual quote from the Bible? I love that one. I just love it.
So it's like, if they take your coat, give them your shirt too.
Exactly. So like, that idea lets me live more free and lets me live more generously and lets me, you know, there's this expression, wear life like a loose garment. Just like I'm supposed to be learning the lesson of non-attachment, I do not want to have attachment to this situation. So I'm going to honor my feelings. I'm not going to push my feelings away. I do feel violated. I feel disappointed in myself for not being a little bit more savvy with knowing the whereabouts of my belongings, my valuables, but it could have been worse. And I just kind of want to move on from it. But I guess I just wanted to throw it out there, because it's one of those things where I guess I thought I did move on from it, but it just keeps revisiting my thoughts. So I just wanted to also honor that I'm not really over it yet. And so I'm just sort of throwing it out there that I know I will be over it, but I just think sort of the more you talk about it, the more, what is it? What does they say? Like, a problem shared is halved, you know, like halved. How do you say that?
Right.
It's cut in half. If I say it, it's cut in half. So like, now I feel like my load's a little lighter. So thanks for letting me sort of dump that on.
No, you. I'm glad you got it. And I'm glad that, you know, there's the beauty. There's a beauty in your limitlessness that I could take from this. So this is a great section for both of us, because there's a fullness and a resilience, like an ability. I don't know that I can see in this situation, like you don't think from the standpoint of limitation or from lack of any kind in this situation. And I love the refusal to take that on, to take on any kind of, well, that was mine. He took something from me. You're not doing that. You're like, you know what? If he needed it, more power to you. You know, there's a beauty yeah. in that. And I'm not going to start thinking and feeling like I need to hold everything close to me because this one person needed something that may have needed something that I had and took it upon himself to take it, mm-hmm. you know? So there's a beauty in it. I just would love to see you scan your home when you're letting strangers in to say, oh, let me exactly. go and put this wallet away in the bedroom.
I can still learn something from it, even though I, you know, it's not my fault, but I do have a part in it. And I'm big in always trying to find a part that I have in something, even if it's not, and it's not to go after myself, it's just to try to always learn a lesson.
So there's two stories, of course, two Bible stories that are coming up for me, very, very short, that I want to share. And it's understanding that it wasn't yours, right? Basically. So when David was an anointed king, it was 13 years before he actually took the throne, and Saul was the king, the predecessor before him. But Saul, all of a sudden, once he realized that David was going to take his throne, he sought to kill David because he felt like the throne was his and not God's. But David could play a musical instrument for him and it would soothe him, and he would throw a javelin at him and try to stab him to death. So this went on for years, multiple years. But mind you, David had already been anointed king. He knew that he was going to take the throne, but he's going through hell. So it's like, I was anointed king. Like, I know that that throne is mine, but he never got haughty. He never took it as it's not mine. Like, he took it in his mind as God is lending it to him. So even though he's like living in caves, hiding from the king who wants to murder him because he refuses to give up his throne, he was going through hell, and it was just such a tragic time. And twice he had opportunities to kill Saul, to murder him in his sleep. Twice he was able to stand over him and give him, let him know, hey, I was standing over you and I still did you no harm. And that was because David never lost sight that before he was anointed, Saul was God's anointed. That was one story. It was like he did not lose sight of the fact that this isn't mine to take. It's to be given to me. And even when it is given to me, it's not mine to hold or try to take true possession of, ownership of, right? And so that happened. I had a realization of that in my study this morning when God was judging his people, Israel. He was judging them because of their idolatry. He had brought them to this beautiful land. Finally, he brought them to this land, and inside the land that he brought them to, they were using the trees in his land to make gods, to make wooden gods and bow down to them. And they were sacrificing their children through fire to these other fake gods, right? And God was so just angry with them after generations of watching their idolatry that he was purging them from the land and taking them into 70 years of exile. Well, the people that he was using, the judgment or the whipping spoon that he was using to punish Israel, even for a temporary time, like to give them a spanking, right? That was Babylon. The issue with Babylon was Babylon didn't just spank them the way God said. He said, take them into your town, like take them, do what you want to do, like give them all the idolatry they want, but in your land, not in mine, right? And then once after this period of time is over, I'm going to bring them back into my land. Babylon did that and some extra. They made life hell for the Israelites. And so what happened was when God was bringing them back into the land after that 70 years was up, when he was bringing them back into their territory, he also punished Babylon for, because you did what I told you to do, and then you did what you wanted to do to my people, and I never gave you that right. Like, God never gave David the right to kill King Saul. He never gave us the right to take, like, if it's something I'm gifting you, don't abuse it. You don't get to do it because it's mine. It's mine. It's like people who abuse their children. They're not yours to abuse. They're God's. You know, he's lending them to you to care for them, to provide for them, to nurture them, to teach them, to guide them. You don't get to dog out mine, you know? And so I just thought, I think that that's what I'm seeing in this situation. There's a, it's not mine, how I see that you're relating to that, what was taken. It's not mine. And if they needed it, they can have it. And I think that's beautiful. And I think that will be ultimately rewarded, because that's how we're supposed to look at things. Okay, he might have needed it a little bit more than me, and that's okay. And you're not suffering as a result of the loss of that little petty cash, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's beautiful.
It's sort of difficult for me to find application for the Bible stuff, because I'm listening for the message, but all the details are
is a lot.
Sort of, yeah.
And that's, I know a lot of people don't have the attention span to take on all of that. It's a lot.
But at the same time, I'm practicing listening, because one of my goals is also to become a better listener. And I am hearing, and I'm just grateful that I do have you in my life, because it's, I'm trying to rise to this challenge of listening, just trying to stay open and to listen to it and just to let it wash over me. And I think in these specific stories that you told, the message that I'm hearing from the first one is that David basically, there's two messages. A, he had an opportunity to just act, to practice retribution. Mm-hmm. So because Saul was violating him, basically, and attempting to violate him repeatedly, but David did not act out of spite or out of retribution, even though it was probably justified. He didn't. And then also he didn't let, what was it that God was giving him? A crown? What was it?
That he was getting the throne.
The throne? Like he was, okay. He didn't let that go to his head or feel like he was taking ownership of it. He was being granted it temporarily. And I think the lesson that I'm hearing in there, or the message, is that everything is temporary. Nothing here. I don't own this. I don't own that $200 or $300. I don't own this house. I mean, literally, I don't own it. The bank owns it, but I don't own this house. Mm-hmm. I don't own anything. You can't take it with you. So that's what I'm hearing in the first one, is that when I go off into that self-will run riot that I was mentioning earlier, when I'm shopping, when I'm having that attachment, that grasping behavior, that is the opposite of God or the universe will for me. So I love hearing those words of, you don't own it and it's not yours. And something that you said to me one time relating to children, actually, is you said that you saw your children as a gift from God. Mm-hmm. And even though that particular language doesn't necessarily mesh with the way that I would conceptualize it, what it did, if you take away the words, is it injected into my veins, let's say, the idea that I am not in control. And that I need to be grateful for my time with these beings, because I don't own them. So I have these little kids, and they're in name only mine, but they're not mine. They've been they've been gifted to me. So my conception, I actually have, remember how I read you that poem that said, don't go back to sleep?
Yeah.
So that person who wrote that, his name is Rumi, and he was from the 13th century. What he says, and he's big on God, or I guess Allah, I'm not, he's a Sufi mystic, but what he says way, way, way back then, even though it is from so long ago and the language is different, it speaks straight to the heart. And he said something that is my definition of God to this day. And it is, there is an unseen presence we honor that gives gifts.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I think of God. So if pressed, I would say there is an unseen presence, and then presence kind of aligns with the whole Eckhart Tolle thing, the capital P presence. Mm-hmm. Now, there's an unseen presence we honor. So I honor that presence by trying to open myself to, you know, the you, that will, instead of my will. Mm-hmm. And it or they or whatever gives gifts. So if I think about that cash that was taken as a gift, then the gift, you know, got transferred to somebody else. That's what I'm getting mm-hmm. from your story. It was never mm-hmm. mine. I don't need to hang my hat on it. It has nothing to do with it. I don't need to overly identify with it. It's cash. I won't be taking mm-hmm. it with me when I die, you know? So it's like, you know, it could have theoretically gone somewhere else. Coulda, woulda, shoulda. It doesn't matter. It's not going to make or break me.
It didn't make or break you.
And then in the second story, let me try to interpret that one. So that's the one with Babylon. Mm-hmm. I guess a similar message, I think you're intending to mean them in a similar vein, which is that whoever took them into Babylon that was punishing, that punishing impulse was also the wrong thing to do. It was spiteful. That wasn't up to them, and they were taking too much liberty with something that wasn't theirs in the first place.
Absolutely.
There's so much more freedom in not thinking that you're in control. Mm-hmm. So if I wanted to feel like I was in control, I could devote a lot of thought to going back and sort of trying to reverse engineer it so that that didn't happen. But I can't. I just have to be in acceptance. This happened. Honor my feelings about it. Move forward.
I love that we talked about it, though.
Thank you. I love that you were able to share it.
I love that you were able to share it. And I love that we were able to break that thing down. And because there's half of me that wants to fight, because, you know, I'm a fighter. I'm the fighter in this relationship. Mm-hmm. So me, I'm like, I'm not gonna fight. And then the other half is let it go. And I feel like that's the war that's always on the inside of me. Like, do I fight this battle? Do I take this up? You know, and that's why I pray so much, because it's like, okay, Lord, do I fight this? You know, or do I let you handle this for me? that's constantly where I have to be, because I'm a natural fighter. And so it comes easy, because I had to a lot, you know, from a young person. So there was that.
Yeah.
But I want to go into our life focus question, which is, how do we use accountability in relationships or while navigating major life transitions?
Oh, we're back to accountability. You're always going to hang that one on me, huh?
Every single week. You know what it is. I think you're having a great week, though.
Oh, I am. No, I really am. Oh, no. No, no, no. So, brief accountability. Brief. You're way off. No. So, brief Love accountability it. Check-in. I have to own up to the fact that I had three places to go this week. On Thursday, I had to take Nico to PT. I was 10 minutes late. Why was I 10 minutes late? Because I decided that I needed a bagel sandwich. That was the bagel sandwich where I realized that my wallet was empty. I really needed a bagel sandwich. And so I was late. I was 10 minutes late. I thought I could make it. I thought I could do it. I thought I could do it all.
Awesome.
I couldn't. And then on Saturday, I had to go to the chiropractor with Maya. And I thought that a good time to wake up for a 9 a.m. chiropractor would be 8:30.
Oh, that's awesome. And get a baby ready?
Yeah. Well, Herschel got the baby ready, because he's amazing and he does everything. But
okay.
I even just not even thinking about the fact that I have to pump. It takes a while to pump. That it was just a very silly timing.
Funny.
I was only 2 minutes late, because luckily it's only like 7 minutes away, but I was still late. I was 2 minutes late. And then today I wanted to take a workout class this morning and I was late. Two minutes late.
Wait, I have a question. So when you're showing up at doctor's appointment, when you're showing up at doctor's appointments, do you have on like mascara and lip gloss?
No. I've never worn lip gloss a day in my life.
So you're not picking up your lips? Like, what the heck? Because it's no way you can get up at 8:30 and put on mascara.
I don't put on mascara.
And lip gloss.
I don't.
And get your...
It feels disgusting on my lips.
Oh, my gosh.
Why? Would it be justified if I was late, if I looked hotter?
Because I'm a whole girl. No, I'm a whole girl, and it's no way I would have to get up at 7:45 because it's going to take me that long to put myself together so that I'm, you know, looking good when I get to the doctor's office. You never know. You might be, hey, doctor, how you doing? I know you got a man at home, but I'm just saying, you know, I always got to look good.
Okay. We could not be more different. No.
What are you doing in here?
No.
So, okay. So the accountability that you're still struggling with is the time management. So what's improved since we've talked about prioritizing though? Like, I feel like there's some growth, and then there's some, you're doing like the cha-cha, what I call the accountability cha-cha, two steps forward, two steps back, two steps forward, two steps back, you know?
The progress is that this morning I did spend an extremely mindful 15 minutes. I took to heart, I have two progress updates. This morning before this meeting between you and I had about 15 minutes to get the cyclone that happened this morning ready, you know, cleaned up, tidied up a little bit. And I really took to heart your feedback where you said you just have to prioritize, or so just take a second and decide. You know, what you said about the dishwasher, I just could not stop thinking about that. I was just thinking, oh my gosh, why did I even feel like I had to empty the dishwasher? It is not visually unpleasant. That's what you said. Why didn't I think of that? Why didn't I leave the damn dishwasher? So today, I just spent that moment thinking, okay, what's time sensitive? Getting my cup of tea ready is time sensitive because I want to have that next to me when we talk. Pumping, that's time sensitive. I need to pump before we get on. And then I could choose one more thing. And the one more thing is getting the dishes out of the sink and into the dishwasher, just because they were crusted over with baby food, or they would have been if I hadn't rinsed them off and put them. So I prioritized that. I set a timer with the extra time. I did the stuff in the sink. And then I just, when the timer went off, that was it. I came right in here and showed up on time to the minute. So
I am chiefing.
Yeah. Herschel said something to me on, I think, Saturday. He said, stop playing it to the minute. And that's exactly right. He nailed it. That's exactly what I do every time. I think, okay, I'll get up at 8:30. The chiropractor's at 9. So I'll get up, you know, throw my hair up, throw some clothes on, I'll shower, and then I'll leave at, and then I'll insert the time I'm supposed to be there minus the exact Google Maps time of how long it takes to drive there. So I won't factor in the time it takes to get into the car, to get the two-year-old into the car. I won't factor in anything else. If there's traffic, that won't be factored in. So it's pretty much guaranteed I'm going to be late. Best case scenario, by the time it takes me to get into the car and then to walk from the car to the place. So I'm usually showing up places, best case scenario, between 2 and 5 minutes late.
And I didn't realize this was such a thing for you, because a lot of times, even when we're like getting ready to do these calls, what would happen is I'd be waiting like 5 or 7 minutes, and I would give grace because I'm thinking, you know, you have kids at home, you have a job and things like that. But I'm literally sitting here with a microphone in my face, like, okay, I'm waiting. I'm ready. I've done my sound check. I'm just sipping my tea, you know? So, but I'm thinking like there are these extraordinary circumstances.
Just a mind full of clutter, just a disorganized mental state. And that is something that does bother me when I hear you say it, is I don't want to be a person who's disrespectful of other people's time. That does bother me. I sort of just always assume everybody else is on some type of flex schedule, but that's not true.
I love that you're working on it, though.
I am definitely working on it. The other progress that I made is that this morning, I haven't been very good with the waking up early. I did do it on Saturday. I did not do it Monday or Sunday. And So this morning, I just kind of decided path of least resistance. I'm a person who's just, like I said, better if I think that people are waiting for me or people are counting on me. I really work well with that type of synergy, with that group energy. That gives me a lot of accountability. So this morning, I volunteered to do service at 2 meetings at 4:30 in the morning, but I actually volunteered to open the meeting. So on Monday, which is the day I've been having trouble getting up the most. And I really want to get up on that Monday because I really want to kick off my week. I always feel fantastic when I can get up at that time and I have my coffee. And it's like, by the time my kids wake up, I've baked cookies. I've done a million things. I've lived a whole lifetime before they wake up. I have time to do me stuff, work on the podcast. It sets me off on the right foot and I can't seem to get there on Monday. So I did volunteer. I took a service commitment. So now on Monday, I am on the hook for opening up this meeting at 4. Typically, I wake up at 4:30. So I'm on the hook for that. And I also took a Saturday. So that way I'm doing service, which keeps my head straight, my head right. And then it also puts me on the hook for living the lifestyle that I'm after.
Okay, so now just one more question for clarity. So are you setting a bedtime alarm to make sure you have sufficient sleep, like if the baby doesn't wake up, or like what time are you going to bed to get up at 4 a.m.?
It varies because I'm a night person, so I struggle to go to bed. Yeah. Yeah. Usually between 9 and 10 pretty consistently, but I think I need to push that a little bit closer to 9.
Yeah. So I think when you get that, actually will help you show up better, because even if there's an issue, you'll be prepared for it. It's like, oh, I went to sleep at 8. And even if the baby wakes up at 2, you know what I mean? You still had a sufficient amount of sleep or whatever time. Mm-hmm. Like if
you're absolutely right. Sleep is so important. And I need help with that. So.
Yeah. So that's okay. So now let's go into my favorite part. My favorite part. Comfort foods that tell the truth.
You're so funny. Because I have a comfort food I'm going to share, but I'm thinking, does it tell the truth? And my first thought was it involves 2 cans of creamed soups. So I don't know if Campbell's is telling the truth. I suspect Campbell's is not telling the truth about what's in that can of soup. That's just my first thought. So it is a casserole. It is built around a can of cream of mushroom soup and a can of cream of chicken soup. And I don't even want to know what goes into those soups, honestly. I don't know whether that was a humane chicken situation. That's the biggest problem for me with that. Mushroom-wise, I don't know what kind of... I'm imagining the calorie content is extremely high. I don't necessarily really care, but it is built around these 2 creamed soups because those are absolutely delicious. And it is a chicken enchilada casserole. This is a recipe that my wonderful ex-girlfriend of 6 years used to make for me all the time. And it always cheered me up and it just put me right to sleep because it'll cause a complete system crash due to how caloric it is. but it's you take, so she would do a chicken. She would actually do a whole chicken and she would boil it and debone it. You can probably find a vegetarian spin on this, and I am likely to because I do lean in that direction, but this is the original recipe that I'm going to give you today. So you would take a chicken. If you could do a rotisserie chicken and shred it up. You need some type of, it's best with shredded chicken. And then you take 1 onion. You're going to basically dice up the onion. You're going to throw that into a pan. You're going to add in the soup mixes, the chicken, and 2 cans of chili peppers. The, what are those? You know, the green chilies that come in those little 2-ounce cans are Mexican in the international aisle. So the onion, the soups, the chicken, and the chilies, that's what you're throwing in there. Then on the side, you're going to take about probably 8 corn tortillas and you're going to cut those into triangles. So that's going to be one of the layers. The chicken mixture with the chilies and the onion and the soups is a different mixture. And then for the third piece, you need just a whack load of shredded cheese. So I like to shred my own cheese. You know, I don't like a bag cheese. So I like to do a sharp cheddar and probably some type of pepper jack cheese. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to layer the tortillas. I probably do a little bit of just like cooking spray or oil, whatever, on the bottom of a casserole dish. I put down the tortilla triangles. I put down a mixture of the chicken, the creamy chicken mixture, and then I do a layer of cheese. And then I do a second layer of corn tortillas, a second layer of the creamy mixture, and then a second layer of the cheese. I throw that in the oven for, I do either 350 for an hour, that would be your style, or I would do 400 for 40 minutes. That would be my more my style, because I'm always in a rush. And then at the end, so it comes out, you just wait till the cheese gets that sort of brown crispiness on the top. That's, I like that flavor. I do it a little bit less for Herschel, more for me. I like the crispiness. He's not a big fan. And then that's the dish. Now, what I do is either that day or the following day, I actually embellish it. I put on some of the red enchilada sauce. I sort of zigzag that across the top once it cools, because you don't want it to soften the crispy cheese, but you just, once it cools, zigzag a little red enchilada sauce across there.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. And then when I eat it the following day, I always crack over easy eggs on top of it and add some avocado slices. Sometimes I'll do it that same day.
Ooh.
But if you crack a few eggs onto that bad boy and then the egg yolks like melt all in there and then you put some cool avocado slices on the side, it's insane.
Interesting. That sounds so good. And what I love that you do differently from me, so I love the creamy sauce. I've never done that. And then I, whenever I'm making like chicken enchilada style, I always use green sauce. I never use the red. So I think that's interesting. I'm excited to try. And I think this might be the recipe that I tried this week.
It's crazy.
That sounds good. I need some comfort food in my life.
Give me your comfort food, and then I'll give you my update. I made your ziti last night, but give me your comfort food recipe.
Okay,
first.
Awesome. So one of my favorite comfort foods, I can't wait to hear this story, but one of my favorite comfort foods, you know, soups, casseroles, like chicken and dumplings, these are all things that my kids love, right? But my favorite lately has been my zuppa toscano. And you know how when you go to Olive Garden and they give you like the soup and salad, that was always my go-to soup, but it was like, it wasn't meaty enough. It wasn't hearty enough. So I had to come and watch a bunch of YouTube videos until I just settled on a mix that just worked for me. So here is my zuppa toscano. And of course I serve it with my crusty garlic bread. You know, my homemade garlic bread.
Oh, I know it well. I made it last night. it was decadent.
I'm excited. Okay, so I take Italian sausage. You know, if it's in the casings, I take it out of the casings. And if I can find it without it, you're looking at like 2 pounds, because I make a big pot of this soup. I have pots that cover like half the stovetop in my house. So I'll make a big pot of this, because this is one of those things that when I make it, I always send out a text that says, hey, I made soup of Toscano, and they're coming through just getting bowls of hot soup with crusty breads. And so I brown some bacon. Like I take a pound of bacon. You know, my stuff is always meaty, and I know this is hard for you, but I'll take like a pound of bacon and I'll cut it up, and then I'll brown it in my big pot. Then I remove the bacon and I'll throw in my Italian sausage and I'll brown that up. Then I'll take out the extra oils and fat. And then I've already cut up my potatoes. Some people use red potatoes. Some people use Yukon Golds. I'm just a russet potato girl for some recipes. And so for this one, because I like the heartiness and the roughness of the russets, I'll use russet potatoes. So I'll cut up a bunch of those. And then I will put them in that pot that I did the meat. And I'll use like bouillon. I use powdered bouillons. I also use better than bouillon as an extra. So I'll mix powdered bouillon with water and pour that over my potatoes and let it start to boil. While that's happening, I am cutting up my onion. I am washing my kale, because I like to put kale in it, lots of kale, because I'm a vegetable girl as well. So I'm washing my kale and chopping that up. And as the potatoes get fork tender, I return my meat to the pot. So I put the Italian sausage back in after the potatoes are fork tender. And then here is where I start adding my seasoning. So I throw in my onion. I put some seasoning salt, like Lowry seasoning salt. I put some garlic paste. You know, I love my garlic paste. I'll put some Italian seasoning, some garlic and herb seasoning. And I love oregano, so I'll put a little bit of oregano in there. Then as that's starting to come together, I put some, I use heavy whipping cream to turn that broth, get it that thicker consistency, and it turns it a lighter color.
You cannot go wrong with adding heavy cream to a soup.
I'm saying.
You cannot.
That's happy stuff for me. And yeah. So it's brothy. It is thick. It is juicy. It is. So then I'm throwing my kale in. Like the last thing that I'm throwing in is my kale. And I'll bring that together for a few minutes. But while the kale is in, I'm putting my garlic. I'm taking some of that garlic butter out of the refrigerator, putting it over some crusty bread. I'll even take like a French loaf and cut it and just spread it with some of the garlic butter. And then as I'm serving it up, the last thing I'll put in, like for the last 2 minutes of the simmering, I'll put my bacon back over the top, and even I'll save a little bit of the bacon to put over our individual bowls. But you're talking about good and warm and satisfying with that bread dipped into that broth. Mm-hmm. And then every time you're getting a spoonful, you're getting the meat, you're getting the potatoes, you're getting the kale. I think I put cheese in it too. Sometimes I'll just throw some Parmesan cheese just because it's amazing, you know?
It is, especially in a soup.
Put some Parmesan in there, and then it's just so heartwarming, and it's a feel-good soup, and I hope you enjoy that as much as I do, because that's one of the ones that I make pretty regularly around here.
Okay. I'll be making a vegetarian spin on that. I've been really into vegetarian soups this season.
I can get with that. Sometimes
I can't with the pork. Ever since I heard that pigs were smarter than dogs, I just can't.
I don't care about the mind of a pig. I'm sorry.
Exactly. But we're both sorry, not sorry, because it is a personal choice. Like, I'm not going to judge you for eating them, but for me, I feel like I can't do it. It doesn't feel right to me. But you know what's funny is, so I did eat pork, because I think someone told me, my friend who lives in the city, she told me she used to date this woman who considers herself a flexitarian. And I think I might be a flexitarian because I really don't eat pork. But last night I actually did eat pork because I wanted to commit to trying your recipe, the ziti. And I wanted to make it. Yeah. And I wanted to make it for Herschel. And Herschel loves meat. So I do cook meat in the home. Mm-hmm. But his family, because they're Indian, does not eat meat. And so it's interesting because he's actually the only one in his family who, his brother eats chicken if he's out, but they don't really they never make it in the home. But Herschel loves it. So I wanted to do something nice for him because he had been home with the kids. The daycare was closed yesterday, and he had been home with the kids all day, and I worked, and I just really appreciated that. So I wanted to do something really special. So I wanted to make that ziti that you talked about, and I made the garlic bread too, actually. So
you did the garlic heads in the oven?
I did.
I love that.
I know. I committed. So here's a couple of things. First of all, the time. I always want to talk about how much longer it takes me. How long do you think it takes you to prepare that ziti, not including the time baking?
Probably about 45 minutes. It's a longer dish. Oh,
okay. So it took me 1 hour. That's not bad then. It took me 1 hour, and it was the first time I made it. It took me 1 hour until the point where I put it into the oven.
Okay.
I think I timed it well. I did that thing that I did today where I just really practice. You're looking at the clock. You're prioritizing. You're trying to be present. You're not getting distracted with other things. So I just tried to be in that mode. I'm never picking up my phone. I'm never then deciding mid-meal that I really need to order something from Amazon, you know? So I'm trying to minimize those distractions because that's how I usually operate. And I made the garlic bread. Oh my goodness, it was delicious. That garlic bread, baking that garlic head in the oven with olive oil is such a game changer.
I'm telling you.
I had the crusty breads. I mashed the baked garlic in extra virgin olive oil. Actually, my friend, my neighbor, Sarah, her parents have an olive grove in Italy. Mm-hmm. And so she had given me she's so generous. She was talking about her delicious, because she makes delicious garlic bread too. Actually, with a product from the Asian market, this crispy garlic, you would never think, but her garlic bread is also insane and delicious.
Mm-hmm.
She had given me a whole bottle of that olive oil, that special olive oil. So I ended up using that, from Italy. So I ended up using that because she's just the most generous person alive. She just, as I mentioned, I was like, well, that's an incredible ingredient to have. Within an hour, she was at my house delivering a bottle of it. She's so special.
So cool.
Yeah, she's got the biggest heart ever. But so I used that, you know, that precious olive oil to bake the garlic. And then I smeared that into the butter, smeared that on the bread, and just did what you said, little bit of Himalayan sea salt. And it was really, really decadent.
I'm saying.
Herschel loved it.
Okay, what about the ziti?
Well, so the ziti also came out really well, but I'm just not a two different type of meats person.
That was too much meat for
it's
you.
It's too much. Like,
well, okay, well, what did Herschel think loved about it. The ziti?
Herschel loved it.
Okay, that's what I needed to hear.
I probably will find, it's actually funny because Herschel just said, like, why don't you just make a vegetarian version of it? Because he just knows how I roll. So I'll keep you posted. It was delicious. It was delicious. He loved it. I ate a good amount of it, and I just passed right out after that.
And you can. I'm glad you love it. I'm glad you liked it. And I'm glad that you are modifying it, because what I've learned for me with recipes, when my mom cooked, everything was more unhealthy. Like, I feel like compared to your cleaner kitchen, like less meat. I do have a lot of meatless days. I have a lot of foodless days, and I do that for consecration. Like, I'm just not going to eat. Like, I need to focus. I need when I don't eat, like, for 2 or 3 days, my focus is so on point. Like, I create at the highest levels on those days, and it's something that's happening inside the body, and I have not researched the science behind that. I wish I had the space to do that, but so it sounds like I'm just running through and just at a farm, just going through it with my teeth. I do eat meat. I'm a bit of a carnivore. I love it. But at the same time, I have a lot of meatless days. And even to the extreme, I'll have foodless days where I'm just like on water or tea for the day, or decaffeinated tea for the day. So
that makes me really happy to hear.
I'm just not even going to eat 3 times a day. That's just too much food. That's too much preparation. And I use my time to produce. I don't use my time to consume.
Yeah.
That's kind of typical. I'm pretty much a one meal a day girl. And if I want something, I'll probably snack on something. Like, I'll make an avocado toast. That's one of my favorite things. And the best thing that I recently discovered is to make my garlic bread and smear a soft avocado over the top. That's heavenly. That's heavenly, honey.
Oh my goodness. That's a lot of I would consider healthy fats. I always do full fat everything. So that sounds decadent.
Yeah, it's really good. So I love that we're doing this. I want to thank our audience for joining us for another amazing episode of What's the Temp? This has been great spending time with you in this way. I love what we're doing. And I love us sharing our life with the world. What do you think?
I'm noticing that I say I love it a lot, but I do love it. I love it. I'm just full of love. I'm so appreciative of your time and anybody who would take the time to listen to us blather on about whatever we're thinking about. And I just appreciate that. And it's an honor and a pleasure.
Well, thank you for joining us today, and have a great week. Be great on purpose.
Have a great 24. Peace.
Bye.